And so we want to make sure we're just as good as the last session. So please help us out to make this session just as kick-ass as the previous one was. Thanks so much for being here today. I had a nice chat with some ladies in the front who are here with their Girl Scout troops, and they were awesome. So I'm sure the rest of you are just as awesome. And we're here today to talk about thinking differently and going with your gut. And how does going with your gut translate into taking the path less taken? I think a lot of us probably, as women, have expectations placed upon us by our parents, by our boyfriends, by our girlfriends, by our friends, by whomever. And so here's the session where we're going to trust ourselves, we're going to go with our gut, we're going to have the confidence to do what we think is right for us. So I'm going to give a very quick background, and then I want to get to these three amazing women as quickly as possible, and then I want to get to you amazing women as quickly as possible. So please start thinking of questions. Ask us anything. Literally nothing's off limits. I didn't get them to agree to that ahead of time. Nothing's off limits. Ask some questions. Challenge us. Disagree with us. Talk about your personal experiences. We would love to have this be as interactive as possible. So really quickly, my name is Aria Finger, and I run DoSomething.org. How many of you guys heard of Do Something? Oh, all right. Okay, cool. So Do Something is an organization that says high school students, college students, I don't care how old you are, you can do anything. You can change the world. You can fight discrimination. You can make sure that women have the rights they need. You can fight homelessness, poverty, criminal justice, whatever you care about. We want to make sure you can take action on those causes. And just really quickly, a few things about my career path that were about sort of the path less taken. When I was in high school, I was an athlete. I played basketball, and that was the path taken. But in addition to being an athlete, I was also a mathlete, which maybe wasn't the path taken by the coolest kids in school, but I love math. I love it. I think it's awesome. I love numbers. I love data. I love stats. And so if you do too, come talk to me. And then when I was in college, I was an economics major, and all of my friends were going off to work in investment banks, financial services, going into consulting, banking, finance, and that's great if that's what you want, but it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to go work at a not-for-profit. I wanted to change the world, and so that's what I did. And then I got to Do Something, and Do Something was my first job out of school. I was a mess. I went to my job interview. I had a tongue ring. I was wearing flip-flops. I didn't know anything about being professional. And for some reason, this amazing woman, Nancy Lublin, who was the previous CEO, took pity on me, I think. And she hired me. And I was 22, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I did an okay job. And I got promoted, and I got promoted again, and everyone kept asking me, like, when are you going to leave? When are you going to leave Do Something? Like, do something else. Like, go get a bigger job. Go work at a for-profit. Go make some money. And I stayed. And I've actually been at Do Something for 11 years, and I was just named the CEO this past year. And that is sort of the path not taken, especially when people talk about millennials. I'm not as young as you, but I'm sort of young compared to some people. And everyone was really surprised that I stayed in my job, but I kept thinking it was the right thing to do, and I kept loving what I was doing every day. So excited to hear some stories from these three amazing women about sort of their path not taken, the confidence they have, sometimes the confidence they don't have. And again, please, please get your questions ready, because really excited to hear from you all. So please hold the applause for 1 second. We're going to talk to Darlene Cavalier, Madhavi Pasin, and Lavi Ajay, and they're going to be awesome. So round of applause. All right. If each of you ladies could just give us 30 seconds on who you are, that would be wonderful.
Hi, my name is Madhavi, and I'm the Senior Director at Technovation. It's a technology entrepreneurship program for young girls between 10 to 18 where we guide them through an open source curriculum to think of a problem in their community, come up with an app idea, prototype that app, get it to market. And it's a global competition, so the top winners, the top 20 teams come to San Francisco each year to pitch their app idea to the Silicon Valley audience. So it's a way to get girls interested in technology careers.
Awesome. Love it.
And I have like three different hats that I wear. So I am Lavi. My blog is awesomelylavi.com. I talk about pop culture, shenanigans, race, travel, basically whatever I feel like talking about. I am a speaker in techie. So I also have a blog named awesomelytechie.com. My background is in marketing and digital communication. So I go to conferences and speak on their stage. And then my third hat is I am a co-founder and executive director of the Red Pump Project, and it's a national nonprofit organization that raises awareness about the impact of HIV and AIDS on women and girls. So we use Red Shoes to get your attention, and then we do workshops. And 3 weeks ago, I released my first book, I'm Judging You, The Do Better Manual. And 2 weeks ago, I officially became a New York Times bestselling author. So.
I'm Darlene Cavalier. I am from Philadelphia. Although I'm a professor of practice at Arizona State University, I am the founder of Science Cheerleader. So I cheered for at Temple University, and then I cheered for the 76ers and started this organization that is over 300 strong now of current and former NFL and NBA cheerleaders who are all scientists and engineers. And then I also founded SciStarter. So this is a way for people who don't have formal science degrees, that's me, to actually engage in meaningful research projects. So I'm really happy to be here and take it away.
Awesome. So, all right, the person with the blingiest shirt goes first. That's the rule. So, Lovie, you're it. Best-selling author, that's incredible. Let's talk about, were there things that you had to fight for, things that you disagreed with, things that you had to go with your gut when you were writing this book?
Yeah. So here's the thing is publishing is a very white-run industry, like a lot of other industries. And one, to be young and black and get a book deal is a big deal because we don't typically have access to the rooms. And I was able to get my book deal because of my blog, and I've been blogging for 13 years. So with my book, one thing I had to definitely fight for in my own head and to myself is that this book had to be a success. Because here's the thing is, as a black author, if my book failed, especially with the social footprint that I have, it would be harder for somebody else to get a book deal who looked like me. So for me, this book could not fail, because if it failed, somebody else would have a harder time. So I definitely had to, I had this internal pressure that I'd mounted for myself that failure was not an option. And just in general, you know, you still have to constantly fight as a woman to be in a room, and then as a black woman to be taken seriously. So every day I have to prove that the work that I do is really good and it's worth being there for.
Wow, that's awesome. How did you, like, there's a lot of weight on your shoulders if you feel all of the time that I can't fail because I am paving the way for black women after me. How do you make sure that that doesn't keep you down?
I don't necessarily let myself buckle under the pressure, because this is a personal pressure that I put on myself. It wasn't even necessarily any pressure that, like, my publishers trusted my voice, which is why they love this book and let me do whatever I wanted, including putting this judgy lollipop on the cover. I think it's just a matter of understanding that my success is somebody else's success. Like, if I win, somebody else's win because of it. So when you're writing a book, one thing you have to do when you have to write your proposal is you have to tell them, what are books that are similar to yours that have done well? So, like, in this process, I had to write four other books that I thought were kind of similar to mine that did very well. So now, you know, when you walk in a room with the proposal and you tell them how I want to write this book, you can actually say, you know, these books did well. So now somebody else can use my book to convince somebody else, like, give them a deal. So it's just a matter of being like, somebody got to do it. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And I think a lot of us often feel that, you know, if someone else wins, that we lose. And that's
right.
A really fantastic message that, no, we can all win, especially as women. We don't have to be the token women in the room. We can bring someone else up with us. And so, Darlene, talking about, you know, Lovie's talking about being a black woman in a white man-dominated industry. Most people, when they think of cheerleading, they certainly don't think of scientists. Mm-hmm. How was that career transition for you, and what did you have to face to make that leap?
Some similarities, and I feel that different type of pressure, of course, but there are these stereotypes associated with cheerleaders, dancers. Any cheerleaders or dancers in the room? And it's not always positive stereotypes. And there are also stereotypes associated with scientists and engineers, especially female scientists and engineers. Mm-hmm. A lot of research into why people think female scientists and engineers are boring, lonely, frumpy lab rats. That's actually how they've been identified. So merging the scientists and the cheerleaders together in one persona, and then finding so many of them are out there, was almost by accident. I also started with a blog, right? We're probably lucky that we started when we did, right?
Yeah.
And it was called Science Cheerleader. And so this was a play on my past, but also my desire to live a more authentic life, in that I work at Discover Magazine. I still work at Discover Magazine, but for years I ran business development and occasionally wrote, and I would push things out that you probably all have heard a lot. Why, you know, STEM, science, technology, engineering, math is so important, and why we all need to embrace it, and why you should all become scientists and engineers. But the reality of the situation is most people don't become a scientist or engineer. I certainly didn't. And later on in life, I became more attracted to science, and that was through my work at Discover Magazine, which just by happenstance, like you, I started, you know, in the mail. I started not with my best foot forward. I can remember mailing out 4,000 packages. This is before email, and I had no zip code on them. So I cost my new company all kinds of money, but they were forgiving. They kind of took me under their wing. I learned never to do that again. But as a result, I started thinking, I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to be a scientist. So where do I fit in this whole world of STEM? Why are we pushing this out to so many people when later on in life, maybe you'll decide that science is important to you? God forbid you have a health issue or somebody in your family does. Maybe you become a nature enthusiast. There's a whole bunch of reasons why people connect to science later on in life, and there's not a lot of opportunities for you to engage as an adult. So I decided to go back to school. And I was much older than people that were at Penn next to me. So there was a feeling of insecurity of I'm going to work so hard because I want to find out where I fit in this world. I didn't want to let my family down. By this point, I had 3 kids and I was pregnant with my 4th. So there was a risk in me saying I'm going to take some time and I'm going to explore this for myself. And this is where I started to learn about these science cheerleaders and the issues that they face with stereotypes. And it's remarkable because they fall into almost 2 fields. Either they don't seem to recognize that there's a stereotype because they have just been so confident and they've been surrounded by so much support all of their life. And these are from mentors, and these are from parents, and these are from teachers, these are from other cheerleaders, this is from a science establishment. Or they are very well aware of it, and this is what made me realize I didn't realize that I did not tell anybody that I was a professional cheerleader when I started working at Discover Magazine. I was so concerned about what they were going to think. Even in my own neighborhood, as an adult, I didn't want people to know that. I was just concerned about that stereotype. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, all these years later, when I actually embraced it and said, I love that experience. Why would I be embarrassed about that? I had such a good time as a cheerleader at Temple. All these skills that made me a great cheerleader, teamwork, public speaking, sense of optimism, time management skills, persistence, make me really good at other things that I do in life. And that is the message that we start to spread through Science Cheerleader.
That's awesome. So many parallels here, Madhvi. You switched a career in academia to not-for-profits. How did you do that? What inspired you? What promoted you to do it? Why did you make the change?
Sure. So I want to start a little behind that. So I grew up in India, and I come from a family where none of the girls ever went to high school. And when I was in high school, I had this whole lot of relatives who were pushing my parents that you need to get her married. And there was nobody in my family who had a female who had done a job. I never had any mentors growing up. So I'm not sure how I landed up at where I was, but I persisted. My mom supported me a lot. I finished high school. I got a bachelor's. I got a master's. This was despite of all the opposition. And then I finally went to do my PhD. So it was quite a, and I didn't take a, in stark contrast to what Levy said, I never took the pressure. I always gave myself the liberty that I can fail because I don't have that support behind me. I don't come from a community that's going to like support me. I don't have mentors. I don't have role models. So I really never took that pressure. At every step, I was like, I can fail. I gave myself the liberty to fail and was never like scared of the fact that if I fail, what's going to happen to, like, you know, the women in my family or my community, they will not see me as a role model. That never occurred to me, and I think that was more like a cultural setting. And then I really wanted to go in education. I wanted to teach. I wanted to write, like, policy papers. My expertise was in international relations and foreign policy. But then I realized, like, I come from a background and the experiences that I have, it's just not doing justice to the career that I have chosen. It's just, like, writing policy papers and doing research, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but I never thought it was, like, making an impact. And I had gone through a phase where I realized I should be giving back more. And that's when I made a decision to switch my career from academic to go into the nonprofit sector. And again, I gave myself the liberty to fail. I was like, I'm going to try this. I'm not sure if I'm up for it. I might not be able to make a difference, but I'm still going to try. And I think that allowed me to, like, you know, I was teaching at a university in India, and when I came here, I decided to make, like, you know, career in nonprofit. And I didn't have a background, so nobody would, like, give me a job. They were like, you know, and then I'm switching, like, coming from a different cultural context. So nobody was even sure of giving me a job, and I started as an unpaid intern, which was exciting. It was difficult, but exciting, but I still persisted. And today I lead a technology entrepreneurship program to inspire girls to take up science and technology and education as careers. So it's not been an easy ride, but I still think it's a lot of lessons that I've learned along the course, and it has, and that's what I bring back when I participate and encourage girls in this program. It's just, you can give yourself the liberty to fail. You can still try. It's not that anything that you do, you always have to succeed at it, but you get a lot of lessons out of it, and that's what really counts in the end.
Wow. I think what's amazing about what you just said is one of sort of my favorite phrases is, you can't be what you can't see. And that's like a lot of the sort of push right now to have women and people of color as role models so that all of us in this room can see someone who looks like us, who is being successful in science or writing a book or whatever. And you didn't have that at all. You literally couldn't see it, and you did it anyway, which I think is remarkable. And so I would love to talk about sort of knowing your intuition and how that's led you on your path. And Lovey, if you want to start, what has led you on the place that you are today?
So are there any writers here? Anybody who wants to be a writer? All right. So I didn't think I was going to be a writer. My college degree is in psychology. Okay. I thought I was going to be going to grad school and getting a master's degree. When I was in college, one of my friends was editor-in-chief of the school paper. And she's like, I think your writing is amazing. She gave me a column on the back of the paper. And I'd be writing this column. And people would see me on campus. They'd be like, oh, I saw your piece. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I started my blog then because one of my friends was like, you should start a weblog. That's when it was still called weblogging. And so I go on Zanga. This is 2003. I go on Zanga. I get a new blog. I mean, I get a blog. And it's called something emo, like consider this letter I never sent, something goofy like that. And it's like in Comic Sans. So it's like I was writing about like college beef and my roommate making me upset and exams I didn't study about. It was terrible. But I had it, so I basically have my college degree, my college career documented in this blog. When I graduated in 2006, I deleted the blog and I was like, I've outgrown this. So I go on Blogspot, I get a new blog, I called it Lovey's Random Rants or something like that. And I started talking about pop culture, really anything I wanted to talk about. I'm naturally goofy, so my writing is my voice. Like how you hear it right now is basically how I write. So people started reading my site that I didn't even know and commenting and saying, oh my God, this is funny. So I had a full-time job, though, because I had to make money. I was like, okay, I have a shoe habit I have to keep up. So I need to actually make money, and this blogging bringing me money. So I had a full-time job doing marketing for nonprofits. But I kept on. So I would work from, like, 9 to 5. I'd come home. I'd be home by 7. I'd blog from, like, 7 to 10. Again, it was just something that I loved to do. I wasn't putting any type of pressure on myself. I wasn't expecting it to be a career. But I kept on doing it just because I loved writing. So I started a nonprofit in 2009, started as a blogging campaign. April 2010, I got laid off my job. And I'm like, what now? Because I'm thinking, okay, this blogging thing is still cute, but it's not going to pay my rent. And what am I going to do? So I kept on looking for full-time jobs, but I'd still be writing. It was like I wasn't paying attention to the universe trying to grab my face and be like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. And every time I'd try to go look for a job, something else would pop up that actually will stop me. So like a project or a brand will hit me up and say, we want you to represent us. Like the Gap hit me up. It was like, we're coming out with a new line of jeans. We want you to be one of our ambassadors. So, but I kept on writing. And again, this was when I wasn't following my gut. Okay, because I kept on trying to do everything else but the writing. I kept on being like, the writing is cute, but it's clearly not going to bring me money. Because I didn't know anybody who was making a full-time living and making a good salary off writing. So again, you can't be what you can't see. I literally was like, I can't see any writers around me who are actually making this living. So I didn't take my craft seriously for a long time. It was finally when And then my blog won like best humor blog in an award. And I was like, oh, people are actually paying attention. Okay, I guess I could do something with this. And then when I finally started paying attention, it was like, okay, I'm going to give this a try, is when things really started opening up for me. Like I was getting emails from people who, somebody actually sent me an email that was like, I was in the waiting room as my mom got chemotherapy, and the only reason why I wasn't crying was because I was reading your blog. And that literally kept me from crying. And somebody emailed me, was like, you know, I was going through a depressive episode, and your blog was the first time that I smiled in 6 months. So I finally was like, okay, there's something here. And I finally did. And when I finally started paying attention and following my instinct and following my gut and listening to the voice that was being louder and louder, that's like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. All these cool things started happening. I end up doing press coverage at the Academy Awards, backstage and on the red carpet. I end up being in all these rooms. I call myself the Forrest Gump of blogging. You know how Forrest Gump ends up in all these rooms? Like, for all these historic moments? I'm that person. Like, I end up interviewing Oprah Winfrey, like, in May. Shonda Rhimes ended up blurbing my book. Ava DuVernay requested that I be at her screening. And I was like, I'm totally Forrest Gump. And it was because I finally started listening and following my gut instinct. And I was like, okay, you know what? I am a writer. I'm supposed to be writing. This is my gift. So I need to start doing it and take it more seriously. And I made more money than most people I know who have full-time jobs last year. And I was like, okay, this is cool.
Oh, my God. Lovey is so fancy. I think one of the things that we heard was, like, you're pushed up against these failures, you're turning, you get laid off. It's like another roadblock. And so I think another thing that we often, when we see, like, famous people, successful people, when we see Shonda Rhimes, when we see Oprah, we think that it's just success after success, and all they've had is sort of positive experiences, when we actually know, when we think about it, that everyone has successes and failures. So, Darlene, you want to talk about some of the successes and failures you've had and, you know, what you learned from them?
I was thinking about that question. It's really difficult to pinpoint what was a success and what was a failure, because as I look back and I would think, well, that was a failure, they kind of force you to pivot mm-hmm. in different directions, listening to the universe, whatever the pull is. And in almost every case, made me stronger, made me a better person. So cliche, but I think the failure would be not acting, just quitting, saying, oh, this is too hard. And it gets really hard to keep pushing this through. It gets really hard to have, it's almost a burden of sorts now. There's 300 science cheerleaders that expect me to continue carrying the flag for them, because this is an important way for them to bring together two sides of their life, cheerleading and science. The SciStarter organization that I mentioned earlier, there's 50,000 people that are involved in that. There's 1,600 projects. So these are where scientists need help from the public. This is called crowdsourcing or citizen science. And they register their project on what used to be my blog. And I was writing about this at Penn because this is where I found my answer to how somebody without a science degree would engage in science. So to me, I thought, that's it. I found it. I'm going to start doing this. But let me share this with my friends and family. Let them know about all these really cool things they could be doing too. That was when I thought there were maybe 10 or 15 of these projects. This is how SciStarter became actually one of the top 10 tech startups in Philadelphia. But with all of that does come this sense of pressure, burden. What's next? And people turn to you for what's next? You got to keep the field growing and going. So in my mind, I was thinking, sometimes when I just get tired or I think, I'm quitting, this is, I don't want to do this anymore. Something happens, you know, whether it's because there's an email that comes across from Girl Scouts or young cheerleaders from Pop Warner who say, I want to be a science cheerleader, or I want to be one of these types of scientists that don't need to have a science degree to do this. This is unbelievably inspiring. And then also things like very happenstance. I never thought I would be an author. I have a book that I've brought copies if anybody wants to see it. This is about the rightful place of science and giving science back to the public. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is published by Arizona State University. Nobody could have told me I'd be publishing a book that had anything. First of all, publishing a book at all. Although my mom and sister are here, and I think my mom's probably jealous because she always says, you're so funny, why don't you blog about your kids? She would probably love for me to do a humor blog someday, Mom. And then also a book about the science of cheerleading, because the cheerleaders are doing a lot of physics. There's a lot of science that happens when you're doing those stunts or just doing your cheers. A lot of biology that's taking place as well. But one of the greatest successes so far that I would not have been able to predict is that my daughter, anybody here from Masterman or any of the folks? All right, so I have three kids who went through or are in Masterman in some way, and one at St. Joe's Prep. And my daughter graduated from Masterman, a public school here. Never, ever would I have dreamed that she would be thinking of, she's at Arizona State University, so I get to see her once a month when I'm out there. But she's now majoring in becoming an entrepreneur in environmental science. And wow. That job didn't even exist, right? That career path did not exist. But she seems to like what I do and is following that path. So that would be something that I would consider a success. But I can tell you that when you look back or forward, it's very difficult to tell the success from the failure because it ain't over until it's over, and you really don't know.
So true. So I'm just going to warn the audience, we're about to open it up to questions, so start thinking about what those questions are. Excited. Madhvi, talking about intuition and following your gut, how challenging is that to follow your gut and follow your intuition in the career that you've chosen?
It's very difficult. It's not simple, but the one thing that I have learned is obviously you think of an idea and you're like, okay, this is the gut, this is your intuition, you need to follow it, and you go and do it. But there is a lot of prep that's needed. Usually when I heard of like follow your gut, I was like, okay, this is coming to my head. I don't need to go into the nonprofit sector. This is what I want to do. I'll just go and do it. But then I realized there's a lot of preparation that's actually required to do that. It's not... You make a decision, but you also have to implement it. And the implementation of that takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of preparation. Like for me, I knew nothing about the nonprofit world. And especially like I was coming from a different culture. I knew nothing about like even like being professional in terms of how you are in the States versus how you are in India where I grew up. So it took a lot of preparation for me to do that. But I realized that I had to do the hard work because this is really what I wanted in the end. So I put in a lot of effort in learning. It was not that it's my gut and my intuition and I know everything. I knew that I had to learn a lot from people who are obviously in this sector and keep myself open to the possibilities. But the one thing that I think has been common in throughout my growing up years and my career trajectory is the fact that I never fail to push back. I just know what's the right thing to do. If it's like whether choosing between two options at a nonprofit or which program I need to take or like what thesis I need to write, I've pushed back a lot on, things that I care for and that I value to the extent that the organization where I am at, Iridescent, currently, this has happened throughout for me. I have actually run into several fights with people like who are senior to me. I'm like, this is the way we need to do it. And they're like, okay, you haven't been in the nonprofit sector for long. I'm like, but I bring a different kind of experience. You need, and there was a point almost 1 year ago where I was at a point where I had so many fights with our CEO that I was like, I think she's going to fire me. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen because every email that she sends me, I end up in an argument with her. And she has done this all her life. And I'm the one who's like kind of the newbie here. But I'm like, but I know, this is what we, and it's not like it's not coming from a place of arrogance, but it's coming from a place of, I'm still learning and these are the experiences that I've gathered. And there is some value in that learning as well. And I was kind of surprised that from the point of I thinking that she's going to fire me, 6 months down the line, she offered me a promotion. And I was like, are you really sure about it? I was like, I literally told her, I said, I think you were going to fire me. She was like, no, I really like people like pushing their boundaries and trying to do their things. And I was like, okay. And the projects that I did push back on did eventually materialize. So it was not that it was all like hollow and empty. But those are the two things that I've learned, that you have to prepare a lot even if you're like following your gut, but you don't leave that strand of like, somewhere you know that it's right. Even while you're learning, you don't have to be someone who's very submissive. You don't have to feel like I'm the new one here. I don't know other people really know. They have been here longer. Because if that's your intuition, you will pick things up fast. You will learn and you'll be able to make an impression.
And if we have any questions from the audience, if you could just make your way to the microphones in the middle or at the side, and we will take questions from you guys. I saw some movement. Yes! Round of applause!
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
China. Check to see what the time was. My name is China with the Y, and I'm 17. I go to West Catholic Preparatory High School. And I've been doing, like, a lot. Like, I've been on the news. I've been on conferences. I've talked to a lot of people. But when I get older, I want to be a nurse practitioner and a funeral director. So communication comes into that, but I don't know if I should keep on continuing, like, talking as much as I am, like, as I've been doing.
So people always ask me, like, kind of like how I end up places. Honestly, I just did whatever I felt like doing in the moment. Like, I did the things that felt good for me. So, like, I wrote all the time because I love to write. Whatever I did, it was because I wanted to do it in the moment. So don't think about the fact that, okay, in 15 years I want to be this, so should I stop doing this one thing that I'm doing now? Do you love what you're doing right now?
Yes.
Keep doing it.
What'd you say your name is?
China.
With a Y. Nice. I will echo that sort of times 100. Like, just the fact that you were the first person to get up in this room, that is a gift. And also, we always talk, your parents might kill me for this, but when we're in school, we're always trying to focus on our weaknesses. You know, we're trying to focus on that C in social studies or bringing up that failing grade and whatever. And that's good. You need to make sure to improve your weaknesses, and you don't want to have those weaknesses, especially when you're young, because you should be trying out all sorts of different things. But really, what's going to make us all succeed in life is what we're good at. It doesn't matter what we're weakest at. What matters is being really, really, really good at what we're best at. You know, when you see, like, a famous scientist, it doesn't matter if they're not good at this thing. They're the best scientist they can be. So I just say to you, it sounds like you have gifts, communication, public speaking, talking to people, going to conferences. Capitalize on those gifts, because those will serve you really well in being an amazing nurse practitioner, funeral director, or whatever else you might come up. Okay. Thank you so much.
I have
much.
Another question.
Oh, and she's taking advantage of it. I like it.
Do it.
I was told this statement this man said, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know and what they know. Can you explain more on that?
I'll use myself as an example for that. So I know writing is my gift, and I know I'm good at it, right? But I end up in all these rooms, and I get these really amazing opportunities. It's not necessarily just because I'm good at writing. It's because people who I know who bring up my name when I'm not in the room. So that means, in addition to your gifts and, like, what you're really good at, how you get a lot of access, which is kind of a gift and a curse, often comes down to the people who speak your name when you're not there. So how do you end up being the person who gets invited to this? It's because somebody, you knew the right person who said you need to be at this. There's other people who are just as gifted as you are who aren't here. Why? Because they didn't know the person who connected them to this. So that's kind of what it means.
Thank you.
Questions.
Any other questions? I have questions for these ladies for days, so don't think we're going to... Oh, we got a question over here. I love it. It's all good.
Hi, my name is Imani. I'm 18.
Hi.
I go to school with the future. I was wondering, because ever since I was little, I used to love to write. But I did it on my spare time. It wasn't, like, something I was always doing. I was mostly focused on cosmetology. And I want to get serious into it. Like, I'm looking into the field of journalism, photojournalism, writing, broadcasting, anything that has to do with journalism itself. And I just wanted to know, what did you do when there's times where you weren't motivated or you couldn't think of anything to talk about, or, like, something wasn't coming out right? It was in your head, but you couldn't write it down.
One, I didn't spend my whole childhood writing everything. I was writing school papers. So don't feel like you're, like, behind on the folder or anything like that. You're not behind. And in terms of, so my blog is where people come to read all things random. So, like, one day I might be talking about, like, police brutality. The next day I might be talking about why, like, yellow Starbursts are the worst. Pink is the best, obviously.
Yes.
I take inspiration from everywhere. So I look all around me. I'm scrolling through Twitter and seeing what people are talking about. I am having conversations with my friends, and sometimes those conversations end up spurring an idea for me to write. So honestly, you can find inspiration from everywhere. Like, don't necessarily feel like you have to exist in this vacuum where every idea has to come directly from you. Right. Use people as your muses, like conversations that's happening online, comments that you're seeing on Instagram, and being like, okay, so I saw this comment on Instagram. What do you guys think about this? So, yeah, just look all around you and find things that are worthy of commenting on that you feel passionate about. Because here's the thing. Don't ever write anything that you can't defend. Mm-hmm. Don't write things to be inflammatory just to be inflammatory. Like, if you believe it, yes, because you're going to have to stand in that stuff. So, yeah, just look around.
Just to add to that, too, there's a saying of publish or perish. Mm-hmm. So I do believe the more you publish, as long as you can stand behind it, which is really good. So good stuff. And sometimes if I have a writer's block, I'll write it. Either I handwrite something in a newspaper, in a notebook, and it's there for me to turn back later. And sometimes those random thoughts turn into my best pieces in Discover or on the blog and so forth. And this actually relates to something the last person asked, China, about, yes, it's about who you know. Many times it is about who you know. And that was a great example of you're here because somebody cared enough about you to make sure that you were connected and came here. But it is definitely about what other people know. And you listen and you listen and you allow yourself in some ways to be shaped by the knowledge of other people. Because that's hard to find in books. It's hard to find just in media, but a little bit through Twitter, a little bit through face-to-face conversations, and allow yourself to think of how somebody else's perspective might shape your own perspective, too, because we can't just move forward with blinders.
Yeah. And just to add to that, and I don't come from the field of creative writing, but trust me, I've written my PhD and I've lost motivation several times. And that lack of motivation generally, it's not only for writing, but just like when I lost motivation, I would just drop it. I never pushed myself that, you know, like I need to write something and I need to do something and I'm not feeling motivated. And, you know, what should I do? I'm not on the right path. If you drop it, and if that's really what your gut or your intuition is, what you're meant to do, you will come back to it after a few days. Right. You cannot just stay without it. If writing is your passion and you're not motivated at this point, if you drop it, trust me, even for a couple of days, there is something inside you which will tell you, and then you come back with the renewed motivation. I really want to do this. This is where I belong. So it's also a reaffirmation. So it's not like if you're lacking motivation, then, oh my God, there's something missing, you need to do something. Just take a break and you'll obviously come back to it with more energy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Imani.
Do you have a question over there?
Yes.
Okay, hi, my name is Grace. I'm 16. Have you ever written something that new information came to light or you later regretted, and how did you remedy that at the time that you realized it?
So I'm also the professional troublemaker of blogosphere. Like, I'm the person who's saying the things that a lot of people were like, I was thinking it, but I didn't feel like saying it because I knew I was going to start some stuff. My evolution as a writer, as a person, is basically documented on my blog. There are things that I wrote 6 years ago that I wouldn't write today just because my ideas have changed, I've grown. I don't care that much about that topic anymore to where I would write a 700-word piece on it. So, and here's where it comes in to where you have to be able to defend your words, right? Which is why you have to say the things you mean and mean what you say. Because if something comes up like that, you have to be able to be like, okay, my bad. I was wrong. I didn't have the full scope. The closest thing recently, which I actually didn't end up writing about it, but one of my friends did, so she had to retract her writing, was the whole Kanye West thing. When Kanye was doing his fashion show, New York Fashion Week, and did a call for multicultural women, and everybody was like, does that mean you don't want black women at this thing? So a bunch of, like, one of my friends wrote a piece going in, okay, on Kanye, about, like, you know, Kanye's bogus for that. And then we see the show, and it's nothing but black women. So she had to be like, okay, my bad, I didn't have the full information. I also feel like Kanye set people up for that. But yeah, so like there are times when I'll be like, okay, I didn't have the full information, but I still stand behind what I said because whatever logic I use is still sound. So, but you have to be learning to, you have to know how to apologize if you're completely wrong.
Yeah, one of the phrases that I've heard is strong views loosely held. So I'm incredibly opinionated, and I feel a lot of things about a lot of things. And it's good that I don't have a blog, because it would get me in trouble. But I can be convinced. I can change my mind.
Yeah.
And I think this sort of apologizing when you're wrong, like, again, women get this bad rap for saying sorry all the time, and we should not do that. But I see, especially in the workplace, or with your friends, like when you like screw up and like don't invite your best friend somewhere, or you like called her outfit lame behind someone's back, she's really mad at you. And then if you just apologize, hey, I'm so sorry about that. Or, hey, I wrote this thing. I actually didn't know everything. My bad, I'm sorry. If you own up to things, people are really willing to forgive you, because it's really hard to stay mad at someone or call someone out when they just apologize and say, I got that wrong. We're cool now.
And I actually wanted to go back to the idea of women saying sorry all the time. I want us to get out of that. So I'm not talking about the times when you're wrong,
right,
and you're saying, I apologize to you. I'm talking about our everyday yep. habit of saying sorry for random things. So like if somebody is like, hey, can you move? And you say sorry. Why are you saying sorry in the moment?
Do anything.
Why are you sorry? So I kind of want us as women to stop apologizing for, because I think sometimes it also comes down to like us almost apologizing for who we are. Like we'll be standing there, somebody will be like, oh my goodness, oh I just dropped that. Oh, I'm sorry. For what? So like be intentional with your words, and when you apologize, it means more. Because if I say I'm sorry, oh, you know I mean it. Mm-hmm. Because I actually am sorry, because I'm not using my sorry randomly. And just don't make people apologize. Don't apologize for who you are. Like, totally. That's important that I want people to understand.
Totally.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Margo, and I'm a high school student. And I realized that as a girl, being in this very competitive society, I'm taking all these AP classes and doing all these extracurriculars. And there was a moment where I kind of stopped and realized that I was caring a lot more about my academics than my sanity at sometimes. Like, my mental health was just all over the place in the middle of all these essays and whatnot. And I'm just wondering about how, as you guys, as professional women in these careers, how do you kind of balance it all out? Or what tips can you give to young girls like us that are trying to go in these fields without losing it all?
What field are you trying to go into? Hmm? Do you have a field that you have in mind?
Pretty undecided. I don't know. I'm interested in learning about different cultures and doing that sort of thing, like with nonprofits. But at the moment, I'm just so clueless. So I'm still working on
it. I work at a university, but I don't work at a nonprofit. So what? I mean, do you have any tips for what kind of path somebody would follow for that? It doesn't seem like there's a degree program.
She's about to say some bad shit about nonprofits.
Oh, we could cuss.
Nonprofits are great.
Oh, we could cut
stuff. Bad stuff about nonprofits. One thing that I do is I try to banish all guilt from my life. Like, oh, you feel guilty because you didn't study for that test, and then you feel guilty because you didn't see your friend, and then you feel guilty because you ate that piece of cake or whatever it is. And guilt is like the stupidest emotion ever, because it doesn't help you out. It doesn't get you to ace that test. So I would just say, in general, don't stress. And again, your parents aren't going to be happy about this. I was a very good student in high school. Like, my parents didn't have a lot of money, so they told me from a young age that, like, the only way you're going to college is if you get a scholarship, so, like, grades are going to take you there. And that was sort of one of the reasons why I thought doing well was so important. And that's true. Doing well is incredibly important. But no one, when you're 30, 40, 50, is going to know that you got that C on that test. Like, literally no one's going to go back and check that out. So the ultimate thing is, don't stress about it, because it's not worth it. And we always sort of hold ourselves up to these ideals. And if we just, like, chilled for a bit, I think we'd all be better.
Yeah.
And on the topic of feeling guilty, so here's the thing. You're going to be... Okay, first of all, let's banish the idea of balance. Okay? I think the quicker we understand that there's no such thing as real balance, the better, and the less guilty we'll feel. And what that I mean by that is, if you're excelling in one thing, odds are you're dropping the ball on something else, correct? Because you can't be here on everything. And sometimes when we're not here on everything, we feel guilty about it. So right now I'm on my book tour. My book tour started 3 weeks ago, and my book dropped September 13th. I have been to 9 cities in 3 weeks. I've been to, one of the cities was Canada. Like, it was Montreal. It was Montreal, Canada. And I did, so I've been doing like 24-hour turnarounds in certain cities. Like, I'm in Philly. My flight is in 4 hours. So here's the thing. In the process of me doing that, I'm a horrible friend right now. Like, if you text me, I might not text you back till tomorrow. I'll call in. Like, right. Like, I'll call in and check in at home and make sure everything's not burning. But, like, I'm a terrible friend. My blog, my audience is used to me updating every day. I've updated my blog twice in the last week. I am actively dropping the ball on many things. My nonprofit, we're on a 10-city tour right now. that I basically told my team, I'm not here. Consider me absent. So they're handling that themselves. And it's the idea that, one, we're so used to, like, strong women, superwoman. I have on Wonder Woman t-shirt today. I am not Wonder Woman. I'm not even close. Like, so if I'm doing really well one thing, I am dropping the ball on others. So don't feel any sort of way when that happens. Apologize to people you need to apologize to. I actually wrote a blog post to my friends that said, I'm going to be a deadbeat friend for the next 3 months. I'm sorry in advance. Setting your expectations is fine. Telling your friends, you know what, I have 3 AP tests in the next 2 weeks. I'm not going to be able to be here. You can't call me at 9 p.m. today because I'm going to be studying. It's fine. Just knowing that you're perfectly fine doing whatever you're doing right now because that's the best you can be doing is really important. And again, yeah, nobody's going to remember you got a C in that one test. You'll be fine. I also was like a high achieving, overachieving high school student, and then I got to college and I was like, eh, I've already done my work. And I'm on the stage anyway. But you still want to excel. Do what you want to be doing and do well at it. But just know it's okay to not be superwoman.
Yeah. And also, if you, like, I work at Do Something. If you ever want an internship, just email me.
That's so cool. So. Yeah, and I just want to add this idea of, like, you know, like Levy said, the balance, and then you can have it all. Like, women can have it all. That is increasing the pressure. Like, it's like you can't have it all. And nobody can have it all. It's not like, you know, just saying that women can have it all. Even men can't have it all. Right. So it, just understanding that it's not like you have to do this extra because, like, you're a female and you have to go that extra route is not going to happen. And I completely agree. If you're doing one thing good, you are obviously not, like, you just have to balance your priorities, and it should come from inside rather than what everybody else is telling you. Like, people might tell you should, like, take 5 classes extra and do this, but you just need to make that decision and stick with that and not feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much.
Good luck. That's such a good question.
Hello. I'm Taylor. I'm in high school, too. I'm with them. So throughout, you know, my entire life, there's been different stereotypes that are placed upon me as a person, either, you know, because I'm Asian or because I throw as a sport, so like shot put and discus, which is seen as kind of a, it's like more of a manly thing. So either people either see me as, you know, Asian, you must be good at math. I suck at math. So they're either like, oh man, like help me with my math homework, or they're like, oh, you're just a gym head. Like, you're just in the gym all the time. So there's these two things, and I'm not either of them. You know, I don't want to, you know. And it's so hard to get away from that. And when people, like, finally get to know me, they're like, oh, man, like, you're like an okay dude, man. And I'm like, I told you. So I'm just wondering, I mean, any of you can ask that, because you talked about stereotypes in sports and stereotypes in race and things of that nature. How do you... I almost, like, get people to take you seriously, you know, when there are so many things that they already have titled you.
It sounds like you're handling it well, right? So you don't sound upset about it. It's just a pervasive thing that happens. So if you look at me and know that I live in Society Hill and I have 4 children, you may have one stereotype, which a lot of other moms have about me. And so over time, it used to be where I thought, like, I really want them to know that I also work, or I also this. And then over time, and as I got a little older, I realized, like, why do I need to prove that to anybody else? It eventually comes out, and I'm so comfortable with who I am because I got used to this idea that there is no balance at all. There have been times where when my kids were young, I was hiding in a closet making conference calls. And I could hear them, Mom, looking around, like, oh, I don't find you in here. Last night, I just told my family, you see me, but I'm actually not here.
Yeah.
You know where the kitchen,
yeah.
You know where everything is.
Yep.
And how many times I haven't returned phone calls from my mom or my sister because the same kind of thing. Like, there's too much going on in one area. But each one of those things comes with its own perception that other people put on you. And that will happen no matter who you are, no matter what you look like, no matter what your background is, no matter what your job is, throughout life. And one thing that I do recognize is potentially a failure or a regret is not understanding that sooner, because you're hearing it from me and you're so young, but it's very difficult to actually absorb that and feel comfortable and confident to live your life that way. But had I been able to do that sooner, I think it would have been a little bit easier for me in life. I just got to a point where either I was just too tired to like worry about what anybody else thought anymore, or I realized the reality is you are who you are. Nobody is 100% anything. Everybody has such rich dimensions and perspectives to them. That again, we go back to that question of you can learn so much from other people. You kind of have to also be aware of your own stereotypes that you're putting on other people, because we do it to other people all the time too.
And since I speak at a lot of tech conferences, like there are times when I walk in a tech conference and I'll be the only black woman who's speaking, and it's nothing but white dudes speaking. And they'll look at me and not realize that I'm the speaker until I walk on the stage. And they're kind of like, huh. So, like, I'm always who I am, no matter what stage I'm on. So, like, this is the person who shows up at a tech conference, like, in all my glory. Sometimes I'll wear, like, a t-shirt that says Black Girl Magic just to make them uncomfortable. Like, totally that person. Like, I just love basically, you know, I also like saying a lot of things with my shirts. So, like, a lot of times when I'm at a conference, I make it a point to wear a shirt that says something. So, with my book called I'm Judging You, I show up with an I'm Judging You t-shirt on. And everyone's like, what? I think it's really important to just own your personhood, right? So, people, how they feel about it is not your business. That has nothing to do with you. Like, when you walk in a room as the person that you are, how people react and what they throw at you, project at you, is not your business. Just don't make people take you out your character. You know what I mean? Like, don't spend your whole time proving to them who you are. Just be who you are. I think it's harder for women, too, because, again, they're telling us, oh, my God, make sure you're doing this so you don't come across as this. And then make sure you're doing that so you don't. So it's just a lot of things we have to sit in a room and consider. Like, oh, God, I can't do that because they'll think I'm too this thing. It's exhausting. So, honestly, pay attention to none of it. Like, so when I show up to a conference or wherever I am, I make sure to show up as myself, because you're going to like it or not. So I might as well show up as the real me, because you might not like the fake me anyway. So,
no. Like, I was on the previous panel with, oh my God, this woman. She was a Marine, and there's 180,000 Marines in the U.S., and there's 1,000 women Marines.
Wow.
And so she was leading her troop, and exactly what Lavi's saying, she was like, okay, cool, so I'm leading my troop, I guess I better try to be really masculine and like never smile. And this woman, I mean, just like the smile on her face. And her sort of senior was like, what are you doing? You're gonna do a terrible job being that guy. So like, your only responsibility is to be yourself, because that's the person you can be best at. And I just thought this, like, woman Marine who was so positive and so nice and so smiley was just awesome to see, because that was who she was. She wasn't putting it on. Someone else, sure, be masculine, don't smile, whatever, but that's who they are, which I thought was really cool. Question.
Oh, yeah. So with our changes in our economy today, I think technology and globalization, kids are getting this message that, you know, they need to pay attention to these practical considerations, and we're pushing STEM and that kind of thing. So it's a little bit of a mixed message when we say, well, follow your passion, and we need innovators. So what are they supposed to take from that, and how are they supposed to balance? You know, not everyone, like, STEM's not everyone's thing, you know? I don't know. So how do they integrate those two things, those two messages?
So you can partly blame me for that, because I'm also in a career which tries to, like, you know, my career is basically inspiring other girls to take the same careers. So she's
the problem.
I'm the problem. But how I look at it is, it's giving the girls a wider variation of options. You can follow your path. But earlier it was like you had role models who were X kind of women, and that's the options that the girls looked at. By telling them that you can also do STEM or you can do math, it's not telling them that don't do what your intuition or your gut is, but it's also opening them to various options that they did not know of. So if a girl has not seen someone in STEM, that's not even on her radar. She's not even thinking about it. She's not thinking about entrepreneurship. But perhaps if she sees someone or meets someone that sparks her interest. So the idea is that you should try several things rather than the careers or the stereotypes that you have already known. So that's where how I look at it. But you can, it's more for exploring rather than saying that you should become like, you know, great women in STEM or innovators.
You know, and I didn't mean to call out STEM either. I guess I also just mean all the practical considerations, just the job market in
general.
You gotta
make money. Yeah.
So it's like they need, we're telling them, hey, you have to be practical and plan for your future and do that kind of thing.
I can understand why that message would be important, but your jobs, the younger people out here, you're going to have titles we don't even know about yet.
Yep.
And so this idea, and there is a little bit of a, I think, disingenuous push with STEM outreach, with the exception of the technical fields. You can go all the way and get a PhD and never have a job. A lot of people suffer from that because they bought into this idea of I'm going to follow a STEM. With it, like I said, maybe you'll take technology and engineering out of that circumstance. But my job, whatever I have right now, didn't exist. I couldn't. That's why I was asking about the path in college. There's no path to get where you are, where we are right now. So I think if you're starting with, if you want this, you need to follow this career pathway. You might not be so happy unless you really, really want that to begin with. So it does go back to following your passion. And I don't find that disingenuous because I don't... How do you say that word? Why do I keep butchering?
Disingenuous, you're right.
Because I think, as I mentioned, with biomedical engineering and these other types of jobs that are out there right now, one of the science cheerleaders loved biology and she loved engineering, so she went to Georgia Tech and followed this path of biomedical engineering. Lo and behold, is now starting to work with NASA to develop 3D printed artificial ligaments for people who are on long trips to Mars, right? She had no idea that was ever going to be an option for her. She just liked two things, and it happened to be that her school merged them together, and she followed her passion and is doing amazing things right now.
And sometimes you might not find that, and you can, like, some of us, like, have, like, not, I would say, like, two jobs. Like, you do blogging, and you have a nonprofit. Like, I still, you know, work at a nonprofit, but I still, you know, contribute to academic research. So there is a possibility that you can find, like, a full-time job from which you earn, but you should not let go of your passion because that's what's going to keep you alive. That may not be something that's your mainstream job, but, like, you can still do blogging on the side. You can still be a cheerleader. You can still be a dancer. You can still go into ads. But, like, keep that alive because that's what's going to let you thrive in your full-time job.
I want to make sure we get her question. Yeah. That's been done.
I was about to say, we have 2 minutes and 3 questions, and we're going to do 45 seconds each. Let's hear it. All right, we got you and then these two, and we're going to do it.
It kind of, like, follows up with yours. So say, like, I know I'm already working 4 or 5 years into my job now, and so how do you transition into your passion? So you were saying, like, okay, that's your hobby, and so you slowly get there. So kind of like that's how you transition, keep it as a hobby, and hopefully over the years it'll
network.
Grow.
Don't drop it.
That's right.
What's
tell
your hobby? Everyone you know.
What is your passion? Do you know?
Kids. I love kids.
You love kids?
So just keep doing it. And then it'll build it to the point where it can sustain itself.
Okay. I'm Janie, and I'm also a cheerleader. And I've always been really good and interested in math and science. And I'm not exactly sure what I want to study or go into. So I guess my question is, like, how do you find out or figure out what you want to focus on for
you'll figure it out.
I'm sorry. What grade are you in?
12th.
You're in 12th grade.
How I see it is like it's not that there is a point at which you need to figure it out. Like I would say just like follow your passion, whatever you're interested in. It will get figured out. Most of the times you connect the dots looking back and not when you're actually there. So my suggestion would be just like, you know, go with the flow of what you're feeling. It will get figured out. Everything doesn't figure out right now. It happens like in hindsight. So just follow what your passion is for now, and the universe is going to tell you somehow.
Yeah. Hang out with people who are doing jobs in that field and see who's cool and hang out with them.
And when you go to college, you'll have professors that'll help shape that for you too.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sure. Good luck.
Hi, my name's Rebecca. I just had a question, like, a little bit of backstory. Like, I want to work in the FBI, and, like, I was talking to this guy, and he was like, no, that's stupid. You should do, like, international lawyer or engineer. They get paid so much money, and I'm like, yeah, but that's what I want to do. So, like, how did you guys respond to, like, criticism to follow your dreams kind of thing?
I just don't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
To be honest. Like, you will always get criticism, and you will always get a lot of advice and a lot of suggestion. it's up to me of what I accept and what I absorb. Like, sometimes it's helpful, I take it, and sometimes I feel it's just, like, over the top, and I just don't want this criticism. I just don't, like, let it go into my head. So that you will hear a lot of suggestions. So it's up to you of, like, what do you want to absorb and what do you want to let go.
And I try
if anything is bothering you, just don't take it.
And I try not to crowdsource, like, my dreams. So as in, like, whatever my dreams are more what my dreams are, what my goals are. It's not for public, like, people to be like, well, that's not going to work. Because once I actually did that, I said I wanted to be on an NPR show. Actually, this was recent. I said I wanted to be on a particular NPR show. And somebody tweeted and said, well, you know what, you should try this other show first because that one's really high. 2 weeks later, I ended up on it. So,
yeah. I like that. Don't crowdsource your dreams.
Yeah, don't crowdsource your dreams.
Let's give a huge round of applause for everyone who asked a question and for these ladies.